Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Winnipeg Free Press, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, Globe and Mail. Jeff Blair has written for all four. And if you can survive the world of newspapers, you can survive anything. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I've been stuffed in your pocket for the last 100 days. When I don't get my bath, I take it out on the slaves. So grease up your bait.
All right, we are back. Arash Madani of Sportsnet is going to join us from Arizona at 11:15. Find out if he took my restaurant tip and went to Los Dos Molinos, the hottest food in North America. I mean hot. They got this thing called Adobado ribs. They're spare ribs that they marinate in Scotch bonnet peppers for a week and then serve them. Anyhow, we'll talk to Madani about that. It is Super Bowl weekend, or it's almost Super Bowl weekend. Super Bowl Sunday, fittingly enough, this year is going to be on a Sunday. Jory Mittelstadt is host of The Bottom Line. It is, of course, presented by BetTheGreek.net. You can hear it Sundays from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, you can follow Jory on Twitter at Jory Middle. Jory Mittelstadt in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. So, you guys, Bet the Greek has New England as a one-point favorite. Sounds about right. Most of the books have it around there, don't they? One and a half?
There's very little one and a halves out there. It's mostly ones and pick 'em.
Okay.
And the total is mostly 47.5. There's the odd 48 and the odd 47, but majority 47.5. And yeah, kind of evenly split between Pick'em and 1 point, New England as a favorite.
Jory, when you're talking about the Super Bowl, a sport that, you know, so much money is bet on and there's so much action on it, typically is there a swing leading up to the game? Or is it pretty static? You know, historically, has it been pretty static?
What's interesting generally about the Super Bowl is there tends to be an initial move. Once the line comes out, you know, it can come out. Like this year, there were books that were putting out lines sort of late in the third quarter of the New England-Indianapolis game when it was well in hand. But by that night, all the lines are up, and there's usually an initial move because a lot of the professionals will want to jump on the line if they think it's a bad number, and we saw that this year. Then it'll tend to stabilize over the course of most of the 2 weeks, and then when most people come to realize, hey, the Super Bowl Sunday, I got to get my bet in, you'll see a flurry of activity this weekend and quite often on game day as, you know, A, the majority of the public plays, and then the professionals will jump in at that point after seeing what's happened with the line and see it move. So you'll get that initial flurry, then it tends to stabilize, and then you'll see some movement, and we'll be watching that obviously very closely on Sunday morning.
Jory Mittelstadt is host of The Bottom Line. It's presented by BetTheGreek.net Sunday from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. What do you think this game's going to come down to?
I think there's a few keys. On the New England side of things, we'll talk about their defense first. And look, I'm not going to tell you anything that most people don't know. Two things, obviously, containing Beast Mode and Marshawn Lynch and trying to keep him from having those game-changing runs and those big plays that just seem to change momentum in Seattle's favor. And the key to that is you got to do it for four quarters because he quite often will not do a whole lot in the first half, but he wears you down. And they tend not to get away from the running game. We saw that in the NFC Championship game. Even when they were down substantially, 13, you know, 19, 7, you know, 13 points, 12 points. They don't get away from the running game. So you got to have your hard hat on for four quarters. And we saw that again, like I said, against Green Bay, where he just went nuts in the second half and really was a huge factor in getting them back into that game. And then the other is containing Russell Wilson and making him beat you out of the pocket. This is the number one rushing team in the league, and it's the combination of Lynch and Wilson. So the New England defense is really going to have to be able to stop that running attack on both counts, both Lynch and Wilson, and making Wilson beat you from the pocket. So I think that's the key for the New England defense, and conversely, the Seattle offense, getting the running game going, whether it's all Lynch or a combination of Lynch and Wilson. On the other side of the ball, I think the key is for how does New England, A, not be one-dimensional? Because when you're one-dimensional against Seattle, it's a huge problem. When they know you're either going to run the ball the majority of the time or throw it almost all the time, it's a problem. So that's part one. And part two is, how does New England find a way to exploit the weakness in the Seattle defense, which is their front? Their back seven, I'm talking linebackers and secondary, is phenomenal. Like, off the charts phenomenal, and they are so fast, and they tackle better than any team in the league. But if they have a weakness, it's running it up the gut, and usually out of a spread. So the key for New England's offense will be, don't be one-dimensional. That doesn't mean that Blunt has to have a huge day, but they have to be able to run the ball at least somewhat effectively. And the teams that have beaten Seattle and or at least had opportunities to do so have been able to establish the run inside, either inside the tackles or even less so inside the guards. I'm talking right up the middle. If Seattle knows it's coming, though, it's a problem. So the challenge for New England will be how to expose that in such a way that Seattle doesn't know it's coming. And then finally, you don't hear a lot of people talk about it, but special teams always matters. Mm-hmm. And last year, especially on punt coverage, the Seattle punt coverage was historically unbelievable. Go back and look at the numbers. Like, it was the best punt return coverage in the history of the league, and it's fallen off a little bit this year. They've had a kick blocked, one or two. So I think special teams will be a big factor, and I think New England's going to try and find ways to take advantage of a weaker special teams unit than we've seen in the past. And in fact, one of the Seattle losses this year was to the Rams, and it was all because of special teams. So I think that's something that you won't hear a lot of talk about, but it's something that I think could be a huge factor in the game.
Joined by Jory Mittelstadt on the Jeff Blair Show. He is host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net. You can hear it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Of course, with it being the Super Bowl, there's in addition to bets on the game, there's also prop bets, an endless series of prop bets. Got to ask you this. Do professional gamblers, big-time guys, will they look at a prop bet? Will they drop some money on it for yucks, or do they just kind of wrinkle their noses at it and go, that's for the amateur?
Yeah, professionals will play. One of the drawbacks, because of how it's evolved over time, and there are now so many, like a lot of books, they'll have at least 1,000 prop bets on the Super Bowl. And that's where, so sort of complete that thought. So mm-hmm. One of the things that kind of steers them away is there's low limits generally on prop bets. They don't allow you to bet, you know, $5,000 on right. a particular prop bet. The limits tend to be lower on a lot of them. Having said that, where the professionals see an edge, and this is what we talked about last week on, you know, the bye week show, and we'll obviously be spending a lot of time on this Sunday, is because of how many prop bets exist now, they can't be right or accurate, so to speak, on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the professionals will look and scour to find where they've made mistakes and where there's value. And so, Now, that doesn't mean they're always right, and that the fact there is, again, what we'll call a bad number or a line that shows people some value, especially the professionals. But there are opportunities out there. A lot of that has to do, though, with how you see the game playing out, in addition to looking back at numbers. Because most of the props, like when you look at player props and things like that, the odds makers are looking at a full season of data. So when the over-under number for, let's say, Rob Gronkowski's catches, you know, receptions in the game is 6.5, well, you could be pretty sure that he averages between 6 and 7 a game over the course of a year, over the course of several years. But there are other opportunities in matchups, player-on-player, and other things where you can find value. So, yes, professionals will look because, hey, that's what their job is, to find an edge, and they'll look for it.
What are some of your favorite prop bets this year?
What I try to do is the type of props that I like are player props, you know, running backs, receivers, quarterbacks, tight ends, both individually and matchups, where they pit, you know, one wide receiver against another, you know, Lynch versus Blunt props, whether it's, you know, yards, and one will be favored where you have to lay yards or you can take yards. So I look at a lot of those, and then I'll look at different props involving each team, whether it be yardage, how many points they'll score in the game during different points of the game, some of the game flow props, like what will the result be in the first half versus the game result. Like, there's all sorts of those props. And the way I go about it is, and this is what I would recommend, it doesn't always work, but what I try to do is I try to figure out, A, how the game is going to be played, how it's going to play out. In other words, how do the two teams match up? What do we expect one team to do versus the other, like I laid out in what you asked me about the keys to the game? So you try to predict how the game's going to play out. And then you look at the props that follow the way you see the game playing out. I'll give you an example, and I don't want to take too much away from Sunday, but the corners on both teams, the top two in particular, you know, with the Legion of Boom, with Maxwell and Sherman on the Seattle side, and while there's been so much talk about Brandon Browner, he's really their third cornerback, and I'm talking about Darrell Revis and Kyle Arrington. On the New England side, these are top drawer corners. So in my opinion, I think the offensive coordinators and the quarterbacks are going to have to look to their secondary receivers, will be matched up against the third and fourth corners, especially when they trot out 3 and 4 wide receiver sets, and also the secondary tight ends like a Tim Wright for New England and Heffelt for Seattle. Because I think that's where they're going to have to throw the ball, right, to have success. So I'm looking at a lot of the props with the secondary receivers, secondary running backs, like a Shane Vereen maybe, who's mainly their third down back and I think could have a really big role in this game. So those are the kinds of things I'm looking at, and that's how I approach the props.
Jory Mittelstadt joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. He is host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net. Which you can hear every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. As we said, New England's a one-point favorite. I'm going to ask you, probably bad luck. I don't know. What do you think happens?
Well, I think what's interesting, you know, I've been looking at a lot of the quote-unquote expert picks, whether it be on NFL.com, on ESPN, on Sportsnet, everywhere. And what's interesting, as you would expect with a pick'em or one-point spread, the expert picks are really evenly split. I think it truly is a very, very good matchup. I expect the game to be close. I don't expect there to be a ton of points scored. I think there's going to be a real feeling out period for the first quarter, maybe quarter and a half. And we talk about this always in big games. Turnovers are going to be huge. I think the winner of the turnover battle likely wins the game, and that's not earth-shattering. But I think here's a stat for you that I think says a number of things. And we always hear about Belichick with 2 weeks to prepare, right? When he's got 2 weeks, they're awfully tough to beat. Well, the last two Super Bowls against the same team, it has not helped. Having said that, over time, that matters. And the stat I'm referring to is when Bill Belichick coached Patriot team, plays a playoff game anytime in the playoffs against a team they did not face in the regular season, meaning that other team didn't get a look at New England up close and personal, he's 11-0. Now, I can trot out a million stats that can support things on either side. I think, though, given the 2 weeks to prepare, and I think that the Seattle defense, while great, is just slightly overrated because this late-season run, they haven't really played any really good quarterbacks, and their defense showed vulnerability in both playoff games. Carolina moved the ball, but turnovers killed them, and Green Bay moved the ball and got way too conservative in the second half and didn't punch it in on the one-foot line and the one-yard line in the first quarter and settled for field goals. I think that given this 2 weeks, Belichick, McDaniels, and Brady, that threesome, they're going to figure out the right game plan to do enough to that defense, the Seattle defense, to get enough points to win the game. And I also think that they're going to scheme on defense whereby Russell Wilson is not going to have the opportunity to break the pocket and make big plays with his legs. And I think Lynch will get his, but the receivers don't scare anybody. And if Russell Wilson can't buy enough time for them to get open, I think Seattle's going to struggle to score. So I think New England's going to win a 21-17 type game. That's how I'm looking at it right now. Would it shock me if Seattle won? Absolutely not. Absolutely not, because of all those little factors like big plays and special teams and turnovers could make this game go either way. I don't see a blowout either way, but I think New England will win a close one.
Jory, it was good to talk to you today. Thanks so much.
Hold on. I got to ask you, who you like?
Oh, who do I like? I always base it on which fans are going to be easier to troll on Twitter. I'm tired of Marshawn Lynch. I hope New England pounds the living hell out of them, to be honest. I'd like 43-7 to be great, but it won't happen. But
yeah, I don't see that either.
I'm all behind New England.
All right.
All righty.
And do you have time to give me your favorite prop bet? What are you playing?
I'm not much of a gambler. No. I kind of like the Katy Perry. Yeah, I mean, that's,
yeah, there's like eight Katy Perry props.
Yeah. I kind of like the skirt or dress.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty safe. Pants below the knees. Based on what she wore to that news conference, there's no way that she's going to underskimp at the Super Bowl. It's just not going to happen.
I agree with that as well.
Thanks, all right, man.
Jeff.
Take care. That's Jory Mittelstadt, host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Let's see what prop bets Arash Madani likes. Arash Madani of Sportsnet doing yeoman work in Arizona for us, the Super Bowl. How are you doing, Mr. Madani?
I'm well. I haven't looked at any Katy Perry prop bets, though, Jeff.
Yeah. Missy Elliott, by the way, is the big surprise mystery act that's going to be with her. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, it's really riveting. Yeah, I'm thrilled to hear about it.
Katy Perry, Missy Elliott, and Lenny Kravitz. I didn't even know Lenny Kravitz was still playing music, but anyhow. By the way, before we just got to drop this on you, Mike Wilner just reporting on Twitter that Ronald Belisario, the reliever that the Blue Jays apparently had a minor league deal with, guess what? They don't have a deal with him. The deal's fallen through. He remains a free agent. So there you are. If you're rushing out to get your Ronald Belisario jersey printed up, you're SOL. How's the Super Bowl experience been for you? Have you been loving a little Marshawn Lynch? Because I sure do.
Yeah, by yesterday, though, it went from cartoon to circus to just ridiculous, didn't it?
Yesterday was the end of the universe as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, it's one thing to come out and be so defiant, but then he's talking to Max and he's talking to SI, he's going on Conan. I mean, he's positioning his Beast Mode line of apparel, his Beast Mode brand that New Era and Nike are crafting for him, and this is his way of doing it. The power to him.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
He turns 29 this year. His body's beaten to all hell. Pretty soon, nobody's going to want to talk to him.
No, that's true. I mean, he's being a great capitalist. God love him. I mean, people are trying to paint him as some sort of counterculture hero. He's not. He's a greedy guy looking to make money. Anyhow, end of Marshawn Lynch. That's what he is. He's a greedy guy. He's positioning himself to make money. It's that simple.
I'm a greedy guy. I mean,
he's greedy,
just like every other athlete, right?
Yeah, he's especially
trying to make
greedy.
A couple extra dollars in endorsements.
Yeah, I mean, and who are we to complain about people making money in endorsements?
Right.
You've got Roger Goodell's news conference today, which this year in particular, I would think, is must attend.
Oh,
I mean,
it should be theater, man.
Yeah, sometimes it's, where's expansion? Sit. Are you going to have a team in Canada? What about rules changes, et cetera, et cetera? This year, you're going to need a flamethrower. You're going to need flame retardant material up there for this one.
Yeah, and, I think the word of the day is going to be elevator. And you just wonder how well prepared Goodell is going to be, because we saw in New York back in the fall when he first addressed this, how poorly he was able to dance on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to believe, Jeff, for the last, 2-3 weeks, that absolutely he's been prepared for any and all kind of scenarios. The question is, how many people in that room are going to be the non-sports, non-football media?
Yep.
How many are going to be agenda-driven? How many are coming in there to absolutely try and embarrass him and catch him off guard? So there are going to be people looking for blood today. And, his message of, well, I take responsibility, we weren't good enough, we're going to get better, that just wasn't good enough in the fall, and it's not going to fly today. So what more does the NFL have to bring to the table now in January that they weren't able to a couple of months ago?
What do you think is going to be the upshoot of Deflategate? Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I thought yesterday, I mean, I'll say one thing for Marshawn Lynch. God love him, but he moved the needle a little bit in terms of of conversation. Now, there were still people asking about Deflategate, but I think really, I'll tell you what, Arash, I'll give Bill Belichick credit, because I think in a lot of ways that lengthy explanation he gave on the weekend, and we all know that Bill Nye, the science guy, basically said it was bull, but you know what? He just spoke so long about it that it just shut people up. I mean, it did.
And, I mean, that was calculated, right? Because on Friday, they said, we're done with availability with Belichick. We're going to bring a couple of special teams guys on Saturday. So everybody left town. All your Good Morning Americas and your Today shows and all the everyone on their high horse and the moral apologists, they all left town.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was left in Foxborough were some football media, local football media, that had been around Belichick for quite some time. Then was the impromptu press conference. Then was that rant. Then there was the anger and the defiance and what have you. So, yeah, he did that. Now, here's what was interesting out of yesterday. Dean Blandino, the vice president of officiating, and the game referee, Bill Vinovich, they had a press conference yesterday. And what was revealed as part of the details of their investigation was, yes, Walt Anderson, the AFC championship referee, he did pump the balls properly. But there was no log, written down. There was no evidence of, okay, football number one was this pressure, football number two was this pressure. I think when the competition committee meets, one of the main things they're going to do is have a completely new process with how this is going to go, when the balls go in, how and when they're distributed. Because now you have former quarterbacks like Brad Johnson and Jeff Blake saying, yeah, we just took air out of the balls all the time. We had ball boys do it. It was just standard operating practice. The takeaway from this, Jeff, is that there's going to be a letter of the law process that everyone has to adhere to, and that's what's going to happen from this.
Joined by Arash Madani of Sportsnet on location in Arizona for the Super Bowl. What's been the most surprising thing you've figured out this week?
I don't know if it's a surprising thing, because Russell Wilson doesn't really surprise you all that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that he revealed yesterday is that in the offseason, he's not only studied Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Peyton Manning, but also he's gone back in the archives and in the winters and springs, he studied what Joe Montana did and what Steve Young did, what Warren Moon did, even Jeff, your old pal Fran Tarkenton, what he did.
There you go.
And what he was looking for was not only the footwork and the timing and the mechanics and the anticipation, but he was also studying their body language. He was also studying in situational football how they handled the big situations, because he says all of those things matter, that the team feeds off of it. And I thought that was interesting, that not only is Wilson in the film room watching tape on, you know, the upcoming opponent and what they run on defense, he's not just watching practice film on how his receivers are getting out of their cuts. He's studying some of the greats in the game, and not only the tangible stuff, but the intangible stuff too. So you're talking about a guy who's a student of the game. He wants to absorb and learn everything that goes into being great. Now, throwing four interceptions is not going to make you great, but he's trying to do and trying to learn as much as he can about the position and what it takes to be elite at the position.
That's interesting, because one of the things, and as a Vikings fan, you, hopefully you'd agree with me as well, one of the things that Fran Tarkenton was always, I was always surprised, and Jim Kelly had a little bit of it too, but Fran Tarkenton in particular was a guy, you know, the rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. He could run all over the place. He could run all day. He was also so composed when he had to be composed. You know, he could sit back in the pocket and flick the ball. And I find that interesting, which is what Russell Wilson's like.
The fire in me.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Russell Wilson's like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
What do you think is going to be the key this weekend for the, for these two teams?
It's going to be who, you know, which team, Jeff, can stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we spoke with Darrell Bevell, the Seahawks offensive coordinator, about their zone read, and he said, you know, we don't want Russell carrying the football. That's what Marshawn is for. And we saw with the Patriots throughout the season that Jonas Gray can be that guy. In the AFC title game, we saw LeGarrette Blount could be that guy. Okay, Seattle's gone up against Frank Gore along the way, but Eddie Lacy was a non-factor in the second half with how Mike McCarthy called the plays in the NFC championship game. So, you know, which of these defenses is better built to stop the run? And how much of that is going to be a focal point? I think this game is going to be one at the point of attack, and it's going to be who can, you know, if you can stop the run, then the Seahawks, you know, I just heard what Jordy said. The Seahawks really don't have weapons that can scare you.
Right.
But the one guy to watch, and I'm not saying this with a maple leaf on my chest, is Luke Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Canadian from LaSalle, just outside of Windsor. In mid-late December, he really started to turn it on. He had his coming-out party against Arizona on Sunday Night Football. He's got 4-5 speed. He's a big dude, a tight end. And he's a guy who can just go down the middle. And if he gets past the second level, if it's one-on-one with him and Devin McCourty, as talented as the Patriots' free safety is, I think Wilson becomes a bit of a matchup nightmare for them.
And it's interesting because Luke Wilson and John Ryan can become the only one Canadian's ever won back-to-back Super Bowl titles, and that was Roy Girella, who was a Pittsburgh Steelers kicker. These guys can win back-to-back titles.
There you go. And if you want another Canadian connection, one of the independent neurologists on the sidelines is a Canadian who actually played hockey at McGill with Mike Babcock. So
there you go.
A random piece of trivia nobody cares about.
You're finding Canadians all over the place. Mr. Madani, go rest up before Roger Goodell gets grilled.
Okay, brother. Thanks, Jeff.
It's Arash Madani of Sportsnet. You can follow him on Twitter, at Arash Madani. You probably already are. If you're not, the hell's your problem? And Arash and Jamie Thomas have been down all week in Arizona doing great work for us, and they'll continue right up to and after the Super Bowl, which is Sunday afternoon. And don't forget, the Commissioner's News Conference will be held today at 1:30. And do we know yet? Do we know what we're doing? We'll be airing it on radio. Okay, Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario. We will air Roger Goodell's news conference live, so you can, I was going to say, you can watch the grilling of Roger Goodell. And as Arash Madani said, and Arash is absolutely right, a little inside baseball here about news conferences. I guarantee you there's going to be a ton of people at this news conference who aren't football writers. They are going to go after, I mean, he's going to be red meat for them. We're talking national news writers. It's going to be great. This is going to be one of those news conferences that's going to drive people nuts, which is, of course, why you should listen to it and watch it in Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You heard us say Luke Wilson and John Ryan, of course, in the Super Bowl, a pair of Canadians. They have a chance to win back-to-back Super Bowls. Only one Canadian has ever done that. That is Roy Girella from Powell River, B.C., former Pittsburgh Steelers kicker. His brother Ted also kicked as well. Luke Wilson's high school coach was Glenn Mills. Coached him at St. Thomas of Villanova Catholic High School in LaSalle, Ontario. Glenn is currently coaching Team Canada in the International Bowl at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. He's going to take time out to join us on the Jeff Blair Show when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, so if you missed the news, the Toronto Blue Jays negotiations with Ronald Belisario, a right-handed reliever, have fallen through. And he will not, or he is a free agent right now, so he will not be joining the Blue Jays for spring training. And Mike Wilner is going to join us just before Hockey Central to give us an update on that situation. It was a low-risk, potentially decent return move by the Toronto Blue Jays, but that's fallen apart. So Wilner will join us, and we'll see where the Blue Jays go from there. Luke Wilson and John Ryan have a chance to win back-to-back Super Bowls. The only Canadian-born football player to win back-to-back Super Bowls was Roy Girella, place kicker with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Winning back-to-back Super Bowls is quite an accomplishment for anybody. In the case of Luke Wilson, he's a guy who, as Rash Madani pointed out, kind of had a bit of a coming-out party against the Arizona Cardinals, and he's a guy that a lot of people going into the Super Bowl think could play a significant role for the Seattle Seahawks. His head coach in high school at St. Thomas of Villanova Catholic School in LaSalle was Glenn Mills. Glenn Mills is currently coaching Team Canada in the International Bowl at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Glenn Mills joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Glenn, thanks a lot for doing this. How does it feel to see one of your players in the Super Bowl? Not once, but twice.
You know what? It's last year. It was unbelievable to think that the young man is 2 years into the league and you know, gonna probably get a second Super Bowl ring. It is just again so surreal, and it's so wonderful for him because he's such a fantastic young man.
Glenn, when did it become obvious to you that in addition to being a fantastic young man, he was good enough to go on to possibly having an NFL career? Was there a particular situation that just kind of where it was kind of revealed to you, or was this guy all along a guy that you had an eye on as somebody who might be able to take this step?
You know, he was a gifted athlete in high school, played every sport. He was at first a fantastic baseball player. Mm-hmm. And he was really, really devoted to baseball. And when he came into high school, we had kind of talked to him. My coach's twin brothers, his older brothers, and we knew about Luke for a while that he was coming through. And, you know, he played in our summer league as well, a summer league that I coached called the Essex Ravens, the Ontario Varsity Football League. And he had an absolute unbelievable season in there, and that's against all the elite kids throughout the province of Ontario and stuff. And we knew then that, you know, this guy is a pretty special player. I mean, he's a pretty good high school player, but when he went in that league and dominated it, we're like, this guy can do some special, special things. And we started getting things together and getting a lot of opportunities for him. I think it was then that we knew, you know, that he was going to be a kid to really keep an eye on.
What was the thing that really caught people's attention about him? Was his speed, hands, his football savvy? What kind of grabbed people's attention about Luke?
You know, it was just his all around. Like Luke is probably one of the most competitive guys you'll ever meet, and just his work ethic and how badly the young man wanted to win and had to win. You don't see a young man probably at that age, you know, 16, 17 years old, that just drove himself to do whatever it took to win and compete, and he just loved to compete. And yeah, he was a fantastic, gifted athlete, incredibly fast at 6'5". That people would just say, wow, this guy, he can play.
How much of a, I don't want to use the word role model, but watching, you know, we've seen Canadians go on and play in U.S. colleges and go on and play in the NFL and win Super Bowls and things of that nature. But to kind of do it and be part of almost, you know, for example, part of a historic comeback on the part of the Seattle Seahawks in the conference championship. Just the big games he's had. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to get lost in the shuffle. He's a guy who is an emerging talent. How much does that give a spark to the kids? You know, for example, the kids who are at the International Bowl where you're coaching right now.
You know, a lot. You know, we had Tyrone Crawford, who's another Windsor young man who plays for the Cowboys, come out and speak to our kids this morning. I was fortunate enough to work with Tyrone in high school in the Windsor area. But Luke is becoming a household name. And I was at the game last weekend in Seattle when they had the comeback, and he got the 2-point catch. And, you know, I tell you, it was ecstatic, and it was honestly something that people could never, ever imagine how loud it was and how insane it was. And, it was just, it was so, so special that, you know, he had kind of asked me to come down, and I mm-hmm. went down, and it was just, again, just unbelievable.
Seems like a really grounded kid.
He absolutely is, you know. Here's a young man that has been to the pinnacle of sports, and he still comes back, believe it or not, when he is home in the summer, and he does a lot of training down there. He is at almost every one of our Ravens games. He still comes in, and we have young kids that range from every age group. He comes and talks to all of them. He comes to practice. He comes to Villanova High School. We had him call up some of the kids that are thinking about coming to Villanova and talk to him. Like, he still finds the time to do all the stuff that's important. Like, you would never guess the young man is, you know, as in the Super Bowl possibly going to win two Super Bowl rings. He's just such a fantastic, grounded young man.
Glenn, it was great of you to join us today. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun watching Luke play on Sunday, and best of luck down in Arlington.
Thank you very much.
It's Glenn Mills. He's the head coach Luke Wilson's head coach at St. Thomas of Villanova Catholic High School in LaSalle, Ontario. Also coaches the Essex Ravens football team, and he's currently coaching Team Canada in the International Bowl at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. We appreciate him joining us. Mike Wilner of our Blue Jays broadcast crew joins us now. Mike breaking the news on Twitter that Ronald Belisario will not be joining the Blue Jays, at least not now. Negotiations and a contract have fallen through. And, Mike, how do negotiations – I mean, it's not like, it doesn't seem to me that this guy would have a ton of options, does he? What happened here?
I don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe he does. I mean, that's the thing. When it's a minor league deal – and it falls through, you wonder if he got a big league offer from somebody. You know, the Blue Jays situation out of the bullpen is a good one for a free agent to come to, because they'll have an opportunity to close. There's no real closer here if Aaron Sanchez is in the rotation. So, I don't know. Maybe Belisario read the tea leaves and saw that Sanchez will probably close and that he might not have as much of a shot as he thinks, or maybe something happened. Maybe he just got a better offer from somebody, or an offer with more of a legitimate chance to make a team.
You know, look, this was not, as I said on the show, this was not a huge free agent signing, but it was certainly one of those bounce back. He's one of those bounce back candidates. He's a guy, very low risk for potentially pretty decent return. I've got to think Alex has probably got a couple of other names in his Rolodex. If he has a Rolodex.
I would hope so. Or his Filofax.
Filofax, thank you.
You wonder if John Axford is a guy who might be available. I think Alexi Gondo might be out of the Blue Jays price range with the people that seem to be interested in him. But there are guys. There are low-risk, high-reward guys. There's Jabba Chamberlain, Matt mm-hmm. Lindstrom, Burke Badenhop. There are a lot of guys who are out there. Belisario, yeah. I mean, he had good peripherals last year, even though he had bad numbers. But he's never been able to get left-handers out. He would have had a shot to bounce back and be good again. But, again, it was a minor league contract, and there certainly were no guarantees that he was even going to make the team.
Michael, thank you so much for doing this.
All right, Jeffrey, have a good weekend.
Take care. That's Mike Wilner. He broke the news on Twitter that Ronald Belisario will not be signing with the Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays thought they had a minor league contract agreement with Belisario. Candidate to get some pretty decent work out of the bullpen. That's fallen through, and I was going to say, I don't know if this is plan A, plan B, whatever. It's certainly not plan A. Alex Anthopoulos will be looking at other options. That's it for the Jeff Blair Show today. Hockey Central at noon is next, followed by Tim and Sid. They will carry Roger Goodell's news conference from the Super Bowl live. You can see it on Sportsnet and also listen to it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Have a great weekend, everybody.